Mr. O'Sullivan, reel 33. Right, Mr. O'Sullivan, we're talking about the coal merchant, the coal merchant's daughter, and the other woman that lived upstairs. Yeah. And you've got an address on a name on a piece of paper.
I'm sure she was a prisoner of war. I don't think she was. Her name wasn't. It's a name. Her name to me is Russian.
And the coal merchant's daughter.
But there wasn't a her Lana. Not we ever saw.
And the coal merchant, what was he, was at Langer as well, I suppose.
Well, he went to Langer.
Oh, that would be a, yeah.
He was this is Frau Langer's father. What was called after the, I don't know what they, I can't remember what they called him. But obviously his name wasn't one if he was a Frau.
Yeah. Now so did Mrs. Price have any information about what they'd done? After the war, how they'd survived.
Well, she never. I inquired when I wrote. I used to ask her about the village, but she'd moved out of Swedenborg into Nosswich. The old coal man, as far as I know, was still in Swedenborg because his house was well away from the village. The Russians wouldn't want that.
And his house was next to the lager,
our lager was part of his house. I would imagine he would take it back out, take it back in. And I never got to know a lot about the. Well, the Corman didn't interest me. If I'd been Tom Tunney, it would have been more of interest to him, or to Benny Lewis, of what happened to the.
So, individually as POWs, you'd make your own
Sort of friends.
So, you had quite a bit to do with the coalman.
He was the carter. Yeah. We used his horse and cart for any.
So, but you never got friendly with Frau Langer and in the same way as you did with Mrs. Price. Yeah. Any other personalities that we've talked about in the village? Any information about them? What they did?
I think a lot of the people would like to have been communists. Not to be communist, but to get the advantage of being a communist. But the people who seem to have been admitted to the Communist Party had been just as keen bloody Nazis. Traudel's father-in-law was the only man in the village who had a motor vehicle, and it was gas-driven. It had a like a big gas bag on top of it. But he wouldn't. If it was anything to do with POWs, he wouldn't lend it at all. Not. That's why we always had to use the ocean drive. Whether it was because of the shortage of fuel to drive it, or whether he'd just been in the orchard. But he became a communist. We never heard any more of a burgomaster, not from Mrs. Price. I know that he'd joined the Communist Party, but he wasn't. The Russian were in charge of the whole area. There wasn't a burgomaster as such anymore. There was a Russian commandant. It was sort of a military takeover at this first start, but before the civilians, Russians took over, before they really moved into the area.
And what about your fellow German workers on the Stadt? Any information about them?
No. Otto Nolman was killed when the Russians went. Otto Nolman was the man who was in charge of the Stadt. He looked after us, and he got killed after the war by the Russians, black marketeering. Eugen Price and the ringleader of the black market is what I understand it from Rolf, and has told me more about it since. His father, Garth, Eugen Price, Otto Nolman, there's another man in the village. We're doing black market stuff. In a big way, apparently you had to do to exist. And before this time, Frau Price had moved she got out of the HGM into the West. She was in Hamburg. But her husband and two daughters were still in Swedenborg area. And Rolf's father, Eugen Price, Otto Norman, were engaged in black marketing in whatever, in a big way. He was in that area. Mr. Rolf's father was the main man in the black marketing.
And what were they dealing in?
Anything and everything. The Prices had a restaurant, a similar cafe sort of thing. So they must have got rations for, or that is for feeding the Russians, the ordinary people of the ordinary German didn't use it, but the Russians did. There was cooking for the Russians,
So there was Russian troops in the area, in occupation.
And there was civilians as well. A lot of Russian civilians was in the area as well, apparently. And they controlled Saxony. And on Price, Alden was cooking for them. At Moskvich, which was a big restaurant sort of thing. And apparently there was pending food from the Russians and flooding it to the people for various things. The black market, and apparently the Russians were very, very, very hard on black marketeers. And the court, Rolf's father, and he lost everything, his house, he lost the lot, and he got 30 years imprisonment. And his wife was left destitute. Rolf was married this time, so he was working for the Russians as a hydraulics engineer. So it was, and Mrs. Price had already got through. How she got out, I don't know. And then Eugen got out and joined her in Hamburg. Then I lost contact with the girls. I lost contact with Claudia, and I lost contact with Inga.
And they were still in the east at this point.
They were still in the eastern zone. But I was in touch with Mrs. Price. And I got a letter from her, 54, that Inga and Rolf had packed, and their two children at the time, they'd sold the house, they'd sold the furniture, but everything that it had been sold on the sly, sort of thing. You know, they could only sell it to people who knew what they were doing, or who they could trust. And in this time, it is all the money they got, which wasn't being much, she stuffed inside a bra, and they drove as far as they could to the Berlin Wall, and don't they? And as far as they could, and got across the border during the night, and made their way to Hamburg. But they'd left everything behind them. And Rolf had a reasonable job in Germany, in Russia,
in the eastern zone.
In the eastern zone, as a hydraulics engineer, he was. But they left everything behind and started again in Hamburg.
And what about Traudel?
I've never been in contact with Traudel since. It wasn't until I was going through all this other stuff that I realised I had an address. In Berlin, Straub, or somewhere like that.
So she remained in the eastern zone?
No, I never heard another word from her.
Now, you visited Germany.
Yeah, I did. And in the early 50s.
And could you describe that? And
I was amazed how well off the way when we got back. When we sailed across from on a ferry to where did we go? I don't know, but it was about 24 hours on the train from wherever we landed to Hamburg. We didn't get to Hamburg itself until 24 hours after we left England. And Mrs. Price met me on the railway station, and the first thing she said to me is, "You're very thin." I thought all right. I thought that was all right. But she said, meaning thin, you know, undernourished. So she had a restaurant in the radio station, Hamburg radio station.
She was running a restaurant.
She was running a restaurant in the Hamburg station. And took us in, and she had a lovely flat. And I was starting to say, well, you could do anything with a flat sometime. And he seemed to tell me, they had a lovely house, a lovely flat. I've got a garden, the grass in front, a lawn in the front of it. And while I was there, I cut the lawn for her, but I complained to her that there was no grass box on the lawn mower. And she said, we cut it and let the grass stop on top of it. So it didn't dry out, and I thought we'd have it. Anyway, that's what we had. I did that for a week. And I took her some, there's still shorter stuff, I think, and there's still under. I took her some Nescafe, two big tins of Nescafe coffee. And I also took some tea, more or less from myself. And we took various things with us, and food and that sort of stuff. And we stopped there 10 days, I think we were there, me and my wife and two daughters. And we had a really nice time. Now, I remember her taking us shopping in Hamburg. The shops, it was the same thing again in Italy. The shops had stuff in them. You know, haberdashery and ladies' scarves and handbags and that sort of thing. But they had two prices, one for visitors and one for Germans. Because the first thing Mrs. Price said to my wife, when we go shopping, don't you buy anything. If you want something, just point it out and I'll buy it. Because if I'd asked for, say my wife, Lara Tambaina, it would cost more for me to buy than it did for them.
Now, you said you were impressed by the prosperity of Germany.
How they'd come up.
And this
it really was.
About what year do you think this was?
Well, I don't know. My daughter was born in 51, she'd be about 5 years old. So it was 55, 56.
Was it after rationing in Britain had ended?
Yeah.
She was
watching.
Now, you mentioned off the tape that when you met Mrs. Price again, that she had already encountered one of the other batchmate of POWs after the
whole thing. She'd been going back to see her. But, of course, that's the first thing she told me, that she'd seen Dickie.
And
she didn't call him Dickie, she called him Richard. Mrs. Price always used correct phone. She always called me Patrick. She never called me Pat. And she always called Dickie Dunn, she always called him Richard. And he'd been back to visit her. He'd gone back to visit, he'd gone on holiday to Germany. And he was in Hamburg. So he must have been in contact with Frau Price the same as I was, to have found out that she was living in Hamburg.
Now,
unless she maybe wrote to Richard, I don't know.
Now, you described earlier in the interview that your last memory of Dickie Dunster was carrying him to the railway station and he was seriously ill. So, did you find out what had happened to him after that?
Well, he went into hospital in Wittenberg and he was there when the war ended. So he was relieved with the... Because when Dickie went to hospital, he was getting towards the... Things were beginning to get, you know. And he was still in Wittenberg when... So when he came out of hospital, he was most probably going to a working camp in Wittenberg. So, and that's where he was relieved.
Now, the prices had moved to Hamburg. Have they ever gone back to Bad Schmiedeberg?
No, they've never gone back to Bad Schmiedeberg. The wall's been built, hasn't it? And Traub is still in the eastern zone. And if you remember, every so often, maybe Easter time, they would open the gate, and let the Westerners through into the eastern zone. Eugen Price never did go back to Eastern Germany because he was still on the wanted list for black marketeering.
Was he ever jailed for that?
No, because he got away from it. He got into Western Germany.
So he was on the run?
He got into Hamburg eventually.
What about Rolf's father? Did he?
He never came out of jail. He died in jail. And that, when his father died in jail and his mother committed suicide, Rolf's mother, she killed herself after her husband was first imprisoned. Because they took everything that the old man possessed, what Mr. Garth had, his house, everything he had, they took. So they left her absolutely destitute. And after, when he went to jail, she killed herself. So that's when what we decided, Rolf and Inga, that they would get out of East Germany if they could. Well, they did do it. They did with the two kids as well.
Now, you've maintained a friendship with the Price family, yeah, over this period. You're friends with them during the war. Who did you consider were your enemies during the war? They weren't obviously one at the Prices. The people that you were.
Well, I always. The Nazis was enemies, but I don't think we thought of them as enemies in the same. We never liked the Italians the same as we liked the Germans, and I think you'll find that out with most prisoners of the war, that the Germans treated us better than the Italians had done.
What about from the German perspective? Which of the Germans do you think treated you as enemies, where you felt that
the
you...
The Burgomaster, the assistant Burgomaster, Traudel's father-in-law, he, although he didn't have a lot to do with us, he really didn't like us. And I think it... His son was another Nazi, who Traudel married. And Mrs. Price... These two girls were courting before I left straight away. They knew with Rolf and Traudel with Professor Rolf. Although a couple of his wedding photographs. Mrs. Price never liked him, and she never liked the father. But he was a counsellor, and counsellors have a certain amount of power in any village. And under Nazi rule, and I should say, under the communists, they have more power than most. Than our councils are. So she had to keep in with him because he was a useful contact in a way. He can make things easier or hard for anybody.
Now, you...
But by the way, since Traudel and that lad have got divorced and she's remarried and Traudel married somebody else. I don't know who he is, and I've never seen anything. You know, I've never had any correspondence with Traudel, but Inga told me that.
Now, you didn't think of the Prices as your enemies. What about the Russians? Did you regard them as your allies? Or?
Not really. The White Russians was alright. We could. And there was a particular White Russian who worked on the farm. If she could get us some milk, she would. Or, you know, if she could get us some when we first got there, if she could get us some potatoes, she would. You know, she was pinching for English POWs.
Can you remember what she was called?
No, I can't. I know she was a well-built lass. That was something that it always struck me, that the Russians never looked underweight. Same as, obviously all us British POWs were well below the way we would have been in Civvy Street. The Russians was well fed. Because they worked on farms
And they worked individually for...
Oh, they worked for individual farmers. And that's what makes me think the woman upstairs, the maid, was Russian. Because I think she must have been a Russian POW. But she was that well involved with Frau Langer that really we thought of her as a friend of Frau Lammers rather than a, but I would say she was a prisoner.
So she wasn't actually treated as a servant?
No, she was, I mean, her and Frau Lammers got on. You'd have thought those two sisters, the way they got on with each other. And I mean, the fact that Tom Tunney and Ben Lewis was visiting upstairs, one was obviously visiting the mistress of the house, and one was visiting the maid, or, well, I don't know which one was with which, but obviously there must have been very good friends, or the Russian girl could have soon got Frau Lang into a lot of trouble, couldn't she? But I mean, there was never any sign of any trouble.
Did Frau Langer have any children?
Not that I know of.
Right. Now, the Cold War, we've moved into the era of the Cold War. What did you think about that, the division of Germany? I mean, you have had like a direct experience of that, knowing the prices and so on.
I never really thought about the Cold War affecting, but I realised that it was affecting the Price family, particularly when some were in the East and some were in the West. The Frau Price was really upset that travel hadn't come out with them. So she sort of had a daughter who was a prisoner in a different country. And it upset the family. Particularly as that daughter was the daughter of Eugen and Friedel.
Mm-hmm. Just a couple of other things that we've talked about off the tape that would be nice to put on record. You had a memory of Alfie Granger and the bombing raid of the village, if you could describe that again.
Well, Alfie was a very short bloke, very short. And the top shelf was about 5'6" from the floor.
That's the bunks that you're
the bunks were, and Alfie, why Alfie ever got onto the top of the shelf, I don't know, but he did. He slept aside of me. And Alfie couldn't see onto the top shelf. So he used to have a lot of difficulty getting up. Very often somebody would get the shoulder on his backside and give him a bump up. But his biggest difficulty was coming down, because he had to turn round, put his foot over the side and feel for a step on the upright. And very often Alfie wouldn't let his foot come far enough to get onto it. So he used to get out of his leg and there you're on yourself, and then he would get himself down. And it was a bloody pantomime every morning. But this particular day, when at night, it was night time when his mum dropped in the village, we just heard these planes coming over and we could hear one making a very funny noise. It wasn't going to go, you know, it wasn't going to fire enough away. And all of a sudden there's these bombs coming across me. I turned straight over with my palliasse on top of me. I didn't come off the bed at all, I just sort of whipped my palliasse on the top of me. Anyway, when things settled down, and where's Alfie? Alfie says, I'm down here. He's under the bloody table. Yeah, I don't think his feet had ever touched the bloody to get down. We laughed about it for a long while. Alfie and his bloody arm were down there. Said, I think he was the only bugger who got down. Everybody else did same as me. They just rolled over and pulled the palliasse over top of them in case there was any bloody rubble come down, because the bombs had already gone off. And you can hear bombs coming down. And whistle when they come down.
And that was the closest you came to being?
To me, yeah. That was the time when the villages were. The villages were very, very quiet with us. Normally, I mean, you'd see someone in the. We used to see the school kids going to school and they would speak to us. This is after the period. In the early period, we used to teach them all sorts of slashing and bad English, you know. Well, we'd been there quite some time. We just spoke to them when we got to school. Because the school kids was being taught English in school. And they'd say hello or. I wouldn't maybe give them chocolates or something like that, you know. But it's. The morning the bomb. The morning after the bomb had dropped, and the village was covered in this bloody paper with black one side and silver on the other, and nearly all the windows were smashed. Things was a bit quiet.
And how long did that last?
For the best part of a week, I think, before they got Before, when we got the windows mended and they realised that, well, we realised as well that it was just a one-off. I think it was a plane who was in trouble.
Did you talk to Mrs. Price about that at all? Did her attitude cool?
No, it didn't change them at all.
Now, you mentioned the language, and you picked up the German language. It was 24 of you. Were there some people, some of the men who couldn't master the German?
Some of them never tried. Georgie Jen never tried. Georgie, if Otto was talking to us, and me and Paul Carrick was talking to Otto, Georgie would say, "What's he say?" Georgie, he just wasn't interested in learning German. We were screwed for not learning it properly while we were the champs. Because I still can't write German, I can't read German, not I can struggle through it and make out what was said. But I mean, the correspondence with Rolf is always in English. Sort of a pidgin English. Some of the English is incorrect, you know what I mean, but I could always understand it. I could always read it because it was in English. And when I used to write to Rolf in English, I wrote in English, knowing that Rolf and now his granddaughter's been over in England, and she's been to Manchester, and she's been to London on nursing courses.
So, Georgie Gent never bothered?
Never bothered.
Who were the other ones that weren't really interested?
Frankie Rolf didn't bother, and although he worked on his own. Because I think Rolf who worked for, he could speak English. He made himself understood in English to Frankie. Frankie never bothered. But now Ray Smith, he was the best one of us for German as well. Ray could speak French, or he understood French more than we. Because none of us really in that group had had a grammar school education, apart from Smithy. And he'd learned a bit of French at school, and he had a bit more, and he had a better education than us, and he could go on German.
But most of you could.
We can make ourselves understood. If you couldn't make yourselves understood by speaking, then you wave your hands about. And I mean, I always remember Ernst, who was the man in charge of the stat. We found out that he couldn't talk to you without using his arms. So if he was cleaning dikes, and Otto wasn't there, Ernst was there instead and was cleaning the dikes. If we could get him talking, he had to stop. He would talk with his hands. I once saw him, he was using the phone in the woodyard to Otto. Otto was somewhere else. And he wanted a piece of wood, a certain size. And he put the phone down and so he could talk to it and showed Otto with his hands how big a piece of wood he wanted. But, if we could get him talking, if Otto was in charge, Otto wasn't that bloody daft. Otto could talk and work, but Ernst couldn't. If we could get him to get talking, he would talk with his hands, so he automatically stopped working. And if we stopped, we stopped.
And your German workmates couldn't speak English, most of them?
No, not. We all was able to make ourselves understood. Where would we? I mean, how long was it? 18 months, don't you?
Did they, any of those, try to learn English? You talked about the guard.
No, they tried to learn English, but we could make ourselves understood, pidgin German.